I'm Dan Runcie, and you're listening to Trapital, where we're going to do one of the more meta things that we've done on this show. We're going to have a podcast where we talk about the business of podcasting. And of course, I am deeply interested in this space. It's my business. I have to follow it on a regular basis. But there's also a lot of fascinating things happening. The biggest players in the space, like Spotify and YouTube and Apple Podcasts, still continue to evolve their strategies. But if you also look at the deals that have happened, there's been a big shift where a lot of the deals were exclusives, but we're not seeing that as much anymore. And then when you throw in audiobooks and some of the other things that have been bundled into these packages and some of the lawsuits as well, there are a lot of questions ahead in terms of where's podcasting going, especially in the next 5 or 10 years. So on today's episode, I'm joined by Ashley Carman from Bloomberg News. She covers the space often, and she also has her own newsletter, Soundbite, where she talks about podcasting, audio, music, and a whole lot more. This is a really fun episode, and I hope you enjoy it. Let's dive in. If you love listening to Trapital and want to find ways for your company to reach the tens of thousands of listeners and viewers who follow this show on a regular basis, send us a note. Reach out to us at podcast@trapital.com and we can share more about our advertising opportunities. This show is a great way to be able to reach a lot of the founders, the executives, and the investors who are pushing entertainment, media, and technology forward. So send us a note again at podcast@trapital.com, or you can click the link in our show notes. This episode of Trapital is presented by State Farm. When you start a new business, your first reaction might be to say, woohoo, yes, or booyah. But one thing to say that could be a huge help is, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, State Farm will be there with the coverage that fits your need, whether your business is growing or just opened its doors. State Farm agents are small business owners too, so they know what it takes. They can help you create an insurance plan that fits your small business needs and budget. And when you need help, State Farm is there to answer your small business questions or help you file a claim and get you back in business. With State Farm, you can worry less about the unexpected and focus more on your business. With a State Farm agent, you know someone is helping you achieve your goals. And just say, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. All right, we're here to have a conversation all about podcasting, and I'm joined by Ashley Carman from Bloomberg News. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
A lot of it's meta for me as someone that is running a podcast myself. I need to stay on top of the biggest trends, but from a macro perspective, there's a shift in the type of deals that have happened in this space. You had all the big Spotify deals that happened right around the pandemic time. Now there's still big deals that are happening, but other companies are doing more of those deals, but it does feel like there's been a shift in terms of what the deals look like and where they may be going. What's your take on where things are now?
You're correct. There was this moment of the podcast gold rush, and that was really a time when you saw Joe Rogan get his first massive deal. You saw a lot of acquisition happening with Wondery being acquired by Amazon Music and SiriusXM acquiring Conan O'Brien's network, for example. Lots of just major deals in the space. Now, some years after that, we saw a correction in the space, which involved basically fears around recession, people, namely advertisers, pulling back spending, and just this kind of macroeconomic situation impacted podcasting. So because of that, podcasting had this lull. Audience is still there, but the money and the revenue and the hot deals and all of that was in question. Coming out of that moment, which I would say was really this past year, you saw still these huge deals that involved, for example, Alex Cooper or the Kelsey brothers, and also Joe Rogan again, really securing $100 million plus deals. In those cases, they're no longer exclusive to a specific platform. It's about locking up these creators as a way to either sell advertisements in most cases, they really want that scale, but also just as a way to, in some cases, encourage people to upgrade to a subscription, like in the case of SiriusXM, to get maybe bonus content or some other perk, ad-free listening, and see them as like a 360 business rather than just the growth marketing effort to bring new subscribers into our broader platform.
It's grown a lot, and these shows just have tremendous mindshare. And I think that even despite the lull that was there, I've often looked at that with the broader trends that we've seen with creator economy and where everyone was trying to start new things during pandemic lockdowns. But then as the world opened back up, people realized that being a professional at this stuff is a lot harder than just buying a microphone and turning on a light, distributing it, and truly having traction.
Oh, yeah, definitely. During the pandemic, celebrities weren't working who maybe typically do film. So they went to their agents and were like, what else can we do from home? And guess what? Podcasts are it, and not everyone's going to want to listen to that podcast. And it also is a lot of work. It is a job. During that kind of retrenchment, you had a lot of these smaller networks, honestly, frankly, go out of business, which was really a tough time. But it was just, to your point, the audiences weren't finding those programs and the advertising market wasn't strong enough to prop up even tiny shows. The long tail still has a difficult time monetizing.
And with the advertisers, too, we also saw a bit of a shift there because for a while it was MailChimp and ones like that. There was always the memes about MailChimp because they would do so many of the NPR shows. And there's a bit more of a shift where whether it was SimpliSafe or Sweetgreen or companies like that that started to do more. But I feel like you can tell a lot about the space based on the companies that are advertising on the biggest shows. And you're just starting to see more and more dollars come in from companies that are traditional advertisers elsewhere.
It's interesting because we're at a crossroads. You have direct response advertisers where the goal of that advertisement is you read a promo code, I make a purchase based off that promo code, everyone's happy. For a while, was kind of out of fashion, I guess. The podcast industry, again, to satisfy these very large companies that are maybe trying to replace radio revenue or grow a massive subscription service, were like, we can't be playing games with this really hands-on promo code style advertisement. We need programmatic. Like, we need the biggest advertising agencies to be able to buy podcasts just like they buy Facebook ads or Google ads or any other type of ad. So there was this push towards that programmatic. It's still going on, again, for those scale plays, but I think we're almost seeing a retrenchment now back to these host-read ads because, one, they can be very lucrative. If you can lock up one sponsor as a podcaster for years, like, that's great. And I think one good example is Andrew Huberman works with Athletic Greens and some other companies that he really has committed. These are my advertisers and I'm going to work with them. And that's just probably a very beneficial relationship for everybody all around. As podcasting becomes more synonymous with video, you're seeing that programmatic advertising comes from a lot of times the video platforms themselves. So namely, YouTube. You can do host-read ads, but we can't be putting these programmatic ads into a podcast on YouTube unless it comes from YouTube itself. So there's these two things happening all at once.
Let's talk about both of those. I do far less promo codes in my podcast ads than I did, let's say, 4 or 5 years ago when I first started it. Sponsors that we have on this show, like State Farm, it's less about that. It's more about brand lift, and they are measuring this the way that they're measuring other campaigns. So I'm glad you mentioned Andrew Huberman, one of my friends, David Senra. He runs this podcast Founders, and he also has some longstanding relationships. So I've definitely seen that shift, but we should talk more about the video piece. There's definitely been that consolidation post-pandemic, and the level of the podcast doing well have continued to grow. But I've also seen that there's just been more professionalism, not necessarily in terms of the content, but in terms of the visual feel, the look. The audio quality has always been strong, but now the video is just mattering more and more. And you look at any podcast that was doing things 5 years ago, you look at the videos today, they've all needed to step up their game in some type of way. I think a lot of that is just YouTube and a bit more of the professionalism of that platform. I've often likened it to the shift that we saw in music as well 40 years ago. Huge shift for music videos. Video killed the radio star. And there were so many people that felt a bit purist about audio as the platform that they wanted to maintain and how video made it more of a short form trick valuing the art. I'm hearing those same conversations from podcasters now where they feel like they need to create the type of content that can be a short digestible clip that can go viral on TikTok or YouTube Shorts or wherever the platform may be. And this year, especially this past year, feels like video has been having that type of shift.
Absolutely. This push for video grew out of a need to find audience. Everyone thought when Spotify got into the podcast space, they would create the Discover Weekly of podcasts. Basically, they'd be able to create some sort of algorithm that would instantly pair you with a podcast every day, let's say, and just continue introducing you to new shows. that really hasn't happened. It's really hard to know what type of podcast someone's going to vibe with. It's a really intimate medium that isn't so easy to predict. Because that sort of algorithmic push never really happened on the audio side specifically, whether from Spotify or another platform, really all that's left is these video algorithms. And YouTube is very good at that, as is TikTok. And so I think enterprising podcasters realized, if I do some clips on here or a full episode, I have a higher chance of being discovered and maybe converting someone to a fan. Your point about video killing the radio star is interesting for a couple of reasons. The first is, yes, there are definitely audio-oriented creators who are feeling a lot of consternation around this push, because they would actually argue that they think audio is suffering as a result of it, because the types of shows that thrive on YouTube are chat shows or interview shows. I don't want to say low lift because it's obviously work, but not an in-depth investigation narrative show, which a lot of the audio-oriented creators, especially those who came up in the public media space, are passionate about. So I think there's some sadness from them. In music, what we're seeing is music videos are still important, but they're really expensive to make. And you've seen labels pull back those budgets or reduce the number of videos they're putting out, and or try to find other ways to make it cheaper through AI or something like that. And so I think this is also a struggle that podcasting has to think about. Is for a long time, people were like, podcasting's cheap. That's why it's such a great thing, is because we can make money off of it because audio is so cheap to make. And as you run headlong into video, you're coming up against, actually, this requires a studio budget, different types of editors, and just a lot more money to make it work.
You had put out a post about the Pivot podcast with Scott Galloway and Kara Swisher. He felt like there was a ceiling in terms of how much they could spend, and their whole suite of shows have grown quite a bit. But still, that's several million dollars for a lot of professional podcasters that are making a living doing this. That's still a pretty high hurdle to be able to cross, just given the production value that's needed in order to maintain that.
Oh, absolutely. If you want to get a studio set up, make it look more professional, and have a vibe versus something like we're doing, which is like a video call or a little more off the cuff situation.
In the pandemic days, I think it was easier to get away with the Zoom call look, but that shifted very quickly, where now if you put that out, it looks like a relic from that time frame.
It could boomerang back. You never know.
One thing that you did right about that we should talk about is, just given the focus that YouTube and Spotify have put directly into podcasting, podcasting for most of its time frame was something that was distributed via RSS feed. You hear from every podcaster, listen wherever you get podcasts. These platforms are requiring bespoke, unique content in order to work there. Most social media platforms do. They're shifting creation from something distributed everywhere to something that you need to create in some type of unique way. And I do think that then puts podcasting more to the whim of the platform someone is investing in. And I've already seen it as well with friends I know that are doing this as well, whether there's some that have very deep holds with Spotify, just given some combination of relationships and the nature of their show and promotional tactics, some a bit more on Apple, some a bit more on YouTube. So it feels like there's also a bit of that bifurcation or trifurcation that you've always seen with social media in that type of way, where yes, there's people that are big on socials, but their content and their style is tailored to success on this particular or that particular platform.
This is relatively new for Spotify. So when the video conversation started to crop up, a lot of people just weren't actually doing anything on YouTube as it existed. So to add YouTube, which is more work because YouTube always has made you use their back end, you can't use RSS. So when that happened, folks were kind of like, well, this is actually accretive for us. Like we're not making money on YouTube, so we might as well put it there. It's just extra money. It's more work, but let's see what happens. With Spotify now, just this past couple weeks, they've introduced a new model that I think is going to be controversial in the podcast space. It'll be intriguing to see what ends up happening. But just to run it through real quick for your listeners, the model is essentially that if you want to have video on Spotify, you do have to use their back end. You couldn't do RSS video. But now, if you do video on Spotify, and a premium subscriber is listening to that video podcast, they will no longer have ads in those podcasts. So that means that if you were using Spotify primarily as an audio destination, and maybe you were putting video on YouTube and you're thinking, we have both, why don't we just put audio and video? It's going to default to the video feed where you don't get those programmatic ads, meaning if a significant chunk of your base is in the US, which is probably a lot of premium subscribers, and if a chunk of your base is primarily on Spotify, that's revenue networks are concerned they could lose. You're hearing pushback from networks that are like, we don't know if we want to go into this because we have a great setup already as it exists with Spotify. We want to continue distributing through RSS and monetize through our programmatic, our dynamic ads. And so this kind of is leading to a big question in the podcast space. Could Spotify go full YouTube and say, we're done with RSS feeds, use our backend? And I think there are people who speculate that's where they're headed, but we don't know.
This is something that we're actually experiencing right now because we've been doing it for a bunch of episodes. And I think the rub is that the dynamically inserted and programmatic ads are easy. You can pull them in, you can pull them out, you can leverage the back catalog pretty easily and monetize the show effectively. It's much harder to do in video, not necessarily because of the video to audio piece, but because you would have to go back in, and a lot of the ads, if you do ads for the way that a lot of YouTubers do, these are baked in ads. A lot of us have seen them where the ad comes up on the screen, it's part of the show. So being able to do that does take a bit more work. I do think that this is a problem that will eventually likely be solved in some type of way. It'll probably be choppy at first, but at least the way it stands right now, it is challenging because I think from a podcaster perspective, yes, if you can do anything that can increase your viewership, increase your listens in a way that is authentic and real, you'd want to do that, but not at the expense of making money.
And this is why the host read ad is coming back, is because if you're going to do video, that's primarily the way you're going to monetize. So yeah, it's all coming full circle, which is kind of hilarious because I've been covering the space, definitely, I think, for 8 years now, and it's like totally in a circle now.
Let's take a break for our Chartmetric stat of the week. This is a fun one. So on Spotify, there's 17 songs with over 3 billion streams. Most of these songs are newer songs that came out within the past few years, but only one of those songs is more than 10 years old. And that's Sweater Weather by The Neighborhood, which came out in 2012. This song has over 3.5 billion streams, which is the seventh highest on Spotify. If you gave me 100 guesses and asked me to guess which song that's more than 10 years old has over 3 billion streams and there's only one of those songs, I never would have guessed this song. But I dug into it and there's two things that stick out about Sweater Weather. So first off, this song catches some steam every year right around the fall because on TikTok and other platforms, when it's sweater weather and people start putting on their sweaters, they're always showing off their fits, and this song is a song that they often play and it often goes up from there. The second reason, though, is that this song has become a bisexual anthem and a coming out song for a lot of Gen Z and younger generations. So it's always cool to see how songs like this adapt a new meaning with different generations. Let's get back to the episode. The other thing we should talk about is Spotify and its focus in audio and comparing that to Google and search and some of the pros and cons of having one company owning a particular medium. And I think we've seen the way the internet works today, there are plenty of great things that can come from that, but there are also plenty of challenges too.
I think this is the fear that some people have, which is Apple, one of basically the original name in the podcast space, has lost market share, according to some studies, to YouTube and Spotify. The question then becomes, you have these two massive platforms, and what happens when they become the dominant ones and have their own agendas? And I think that's the big question that a lot of people are grappling with, both in podcasting, but I think music is also grappling with this and audiobooks, but I think we're seeing it there too.
What's your take on Apple itself? Because this is a company that clearly had the 3-1 lead in audio. The entire format was named off of their product. I know it's something they haven't prioritized compared to everything else that they've done, but what's the rationale, just considering how much this company spends on content and services and other things that seem like this would naturally fall in line with their broader strategy that Apple has?
Yeah, it's really only in recent years that true revenue has been tied to the podcast app, because Apple does now offer subscriptions through Apple directly. They finally have a revenue line. But for all the years preceding that, there was no direct revenue line. And so I think that probably is part of the reason why it wasn't necessarily prioritized. Apple had an iOS update in 2023 that essentially cut the number of downloads that many podcasters had, especially if they've been doing podcasting for a long time. Downloads are used to be the primary way that people tracked the size of shows, and it's still used. But I think with Apple doing that update, and I heard people were seeing anywhere from like 20 to 50 to 60% of their downloads cut. That is significant. And so if that was what was counting towards Apple being the number one platform or the most popular and biggest, you could see why they might have taken a hit through that update.
Let's talk about this, because that stems back to one of the challenges podcasting has had over the years, which is just data and the quality of that data, because RSS downloads in general is a fairly archaic view of trying to measure popularity of a show. Of course, it can be correlated, but that isn't a true measure of consumption. And back when we had started to see Spotify make more focus in this area, it did seem like that was where they were going to win, because this is a company that measures streams. They know exactly what percentage of a song you're listening to. They can apply that to any type of track on the platform. Of course, YouTube has very similar analytics for all the video that comes through the platform there. Apple, of course, makes this change. And I know that we saw a download drop as well. And I think at first it was, whoa, where did this come from? But you realize you put two and two together. And it's okay, that makes sense. So I can see why there could be some discouragement that's there. But again, Apple has the same analytics and tools to be able to do this. And I know that there's been companies like Chartable, RIP, and others that had tried their best to offer this type of insights, but it always felt a bit piecemeal. And it felt like it was something that the streaming companies like YouTube and Spotify specifically did have an advantage in.
Yeah, this gets back to proprietary systems. It's just because when podcasts started up, you didn't have smartphones that were going to connect to the internet all day and you could stream. So the idea was really you subscribe to a show, or follow a show now is the terminology, but you subscribe to a show and then you always get the download of that episode when you're connected to the internet, because you can then listen to it on the go. Obviously now there's really not a need for that. And I think Spotify would probably argue we should be streaming. We shouldn't be downloading. Spotify has its numbers, YouTube has its numbers, Apple's using RSS, and really the only people who know true numbers are the podcasters themselves, who have their proprietary hosting service backend. And there have been services and trackers that you can look at publicly when people opt in that track these things, but not everyone opts in. The biggest shows have no reason to opt in. It's really for advertising purposes that people do opt in. So I am skeptical we will ever get true clarity, but it is something that's very frustrating.
I do have faith that this will improve at some point. It feels inevitable that these platforms themselves, as they become more dominant and powerful destinations, that there'll be some type of discovery mode style feature in podcasting that these platforms will offer themselves, like some type of exchange in compensation in revenue or from some type of money in order for additional promotion through their means. And I know that maybe you probably wouldn't see it as much in Apple, because I think they do try to be a bit more editorially focused than the others, where they're trying to highlight new and noteworthy and things like that. But that does seem like the next likely frontier here.
Definitely. There have been podcast apps that experimented with that. Spotify with Marquee and some of its other marketplace products, I know podcasters have been able to use that in the past. So it's existed, but not to a scale that has been extremely measurable and massive for the podcasters themselves.
We've used Overcast, and Overcast has been great in the app. You can pay however much and reach the particular genre or topic that you're trying to reach. But Overcast itself is a pretty small app. So you do it enough times and you're starting to reach the same people over. So it's more about maintaining as opposed to growing. But it's a little different on these platforms like Spotify and YouTube for sure. So that definitely does feel.
Your video will help potentially, because you can put ad spend behind video on Instagram and TikTok and everywhere else. It's harder to put that ad spend behind an audio product.
Audio doesn't go viral the same way video can.
Exactly.
One thing that we should talk about that you have written about is paid podcasting, or people that are paying to access different podcasts. And This has always happened to some extent in niche types of ways, whether it's people that pay additional money through Patreon for their favorite podcasts to listen to. I know certain ones in tech and VC are structured that way, but it feels like this is likely going to continue to increase as a trend. I know there was things in the past like Luminary that was 5 years ago, 6 years ago when they had their whole company based on this, but that didn't quite work out in that way. I'm very interested to see how this works specifically in audio, but the fact that more podcasting is shifting to video, I think that adds another layer of intrigue to this.
Subscriptions for certain podcasters have been really successful. Recently, Shane Gillis, the comedian, his show is the top podcast subscription on Patreon. And it's a podcast that honestly, I don't really ever see it show up on charts much, but that speaks to how the subscription fills a void for super fans and can be a lucrative revenue stream for the right kind of podcaster. That said, I think we're all talking about it across industries, subscription fatigue, everything goes behind a paywall, how much are consumers willing to take and what are they willing to pay for? Does, I believe, become a pertinent question in the near future.
This is probably a broader question as well for a lot of the streaming companies in general, because in music, everyone's trying to figure out what this streaming 2.0 and the super fan tiers and things like that. And the more you talk to people, the more that's trying to lean into paying some type of direct money for a particular artist that you want to hear exclusives or early releases or whatever that may be. We'll see whether that's successful. Podcasting is a little different because it's more on an individual basis. So there's trends that can happen here or there. Like, for instance, my wife is a big fan of Bitch Sesh. They talk about all the Bravo shows there. And they have the show. I think most of the episodes are paid. They may have a few that are free, but they also don't have any shows on YouTube. I was just checking this out before we started recording. They don't have any shows on YouTube at all. And I think there's a fan page, actually, that was just uploading some of the audio from past episodes that weren't behind a paywall or something like that. So again, it depends on what the shows are like. So I know that this whole industry is trying to, audio and video more broadly, is just trying to figure out what can be paid, what can be free and ad supported, and so on.
Yeah. And it's a big question for anyone in media and even music. Okay, what do you want to put behind a paywall, which will, of course, limit your reach, but comes with the payoff of potentially a higher return on revenue? So, yeah, I don't know. I do think, though, at least the sentiment I feel just more as a consumer is people are wondering, okay, how many subscriptions am I going to have? And for the music services that are charging more, at what point do people tap out, or what point are they done? And at what point do they need some other incentive to keep paying?
This is probably a timely topic for you with your own newsletter, Soundbite, going to be behind a paid subscription as well. So I'm sure that's also, of course, not podcasting, but a similar discussion.
Exactly. I am also a creator. So here we are.
Since we're talking about different types of formats, we should talk about audiobooks specifically, because there's been tremendous growth and opportunity there with some of the efforts that Spotify has made to add audiobooks there. We also know that Audible and Amazon has done a bunch of work there to elevate what's happening. But we also know that audiobooks have been a pain point. How do you split the pie that's already there, specifically with what we've seen on the Spotify side? And there are already lawsuits from the MLC and NMPA about what that looks like and whether or not there should be an opt-in, opt-out, what that additional price should look like, and potentially $150 million of annual revenue per year that people have an issue about, understandably. So it'll be interesting to see how audiobooks play a role in all of this.
The audiobook story for me that's been most fascinating to watch for many years, Audible was the main shop in town. If you were a true audiobook fan, you probably subscribed to Audible, or you were going to your library, most likely. When Spotify came in, this was the storyline I was watching. This is a real challenger to Audible. And Spotify has a huge user base, and their user base is also seemingly young. Like, they're bringing in new subscribers, and they try to reach Gen Z. And I think that probably happens more than Audible does, at least from the marketing I see. It has not gone well from a music publisher perspective. After Spotify decided to introduce audiobooks, some months later, they decided to classify themselves as a quote-unquote bundle and essentially opt everyone into this bundle, which is audiobooks and music together plus podcasts. the MLC, the Mechanical Licensing Collective, sued them saying this is fraudulent. You didn't offer a standalone offering that's just music. And now Spotify, they do offer one, but they were like, this is fake. You don't actually want people to sign up for this. So yeah, it's been going back and forth in the courts. Amazon introduced audiobooks to Amazon Music, one audiobook a month for the unlimited subscribers. And seemingly, at least based off the PR that's been put out, it's been relatively peaceful. UMG announced a deal with Amazon Music where they mentioned that audiobooks were, they had an agreement. And the NMPA, I believe, put out a statement after Amazon introduced the audiobook and was like, things are good. So I don't know. It seems like they won't classify themselves as a bundle, which would give them that kind of loophole to reduce the royalty payments to publishers and songwriters.
There eventually need to be some type of firm solution there. It seems like there has been some improvements, but we'll see. I understand that they are understandably upset about it. And I also know that there's been some question marks from the audiobook publishers and the authors themselves, because that whole type of payment system on Audible was always a bit of a question, right? I think the direct purchase of a ebook was a bit more straightforward and easier for them to digest, no different than a digital download was in music. But once you got into these $11, $12 a month, all you can eat, all you can consume memberships, it was very difficult and frustrating. I remember how those conversations were. You're coupling that with all the conversations in music. There's a lot to sort out there.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think when I talk to audiobook publishers, agents, and authors, if they are wary, it's that they are afraid to follow in the music industry's footsteps. Obviously, unlimited streaming has rejuvenated the music business from the piracy era, but I think the publishing business is a purchase-based business currently. People buy books, people buy audiobooks, people buy things. And so I think there's concern that if we start giving people a taste of, oh, you don't have to buy this, it's actually just included in your subscription, that's for music and podcasts, that people could end up devaluing audiobooks and expecting it for free. I think that is the main concern I hear. But that said, I do think it has beneficial for the audiobook industry to be in front of more people, reach more listeners, and get paid off it.
I would agree. It's a similar type of flow to what we saw in music as well, where people were used to buying this physical product, even if they didn't always consume it. And in many cases, they didn't. You talk to a lot of people in the book industry. Yes, they are selling some books that are actually being purchased, but they're also selling some that look good on coffee tables so that they can impress people, so that they can look good on bookshelves and things like that. You shift primarily to a consumption perspective, it does change the dynamics quite a bit, and you lose a lot of the type of book sales that you once had. It'll be interesting to see how that continues to evolve.
Definitely. And that lawsuit with the MLC, whatever happens there will be very telling as well.
We should talk about the big players in the space again, because I know we mostly been talking about three main players, Spotify, YouTube, and Apple. I wonder, is there room for a fourth entrant that could be just as big or even bigger than these ones? And maybe Amazon is likely the obvious answer because of some of the things we've already discussed in this episode. But where's your take on that?
Do you mean for all of audio or podcasting or music?
Let's stick with podcasting specifically.
I think people are getting their needs met from the various podcast platforms that exist, specifically the behemoths in the space. But you have seen experimentation from folks like more internationally, but there's a company called Podimo, similar to Luminary, where they have exclusive programming and they want you to sign up for the subscription. And theoretically, if you could build an offering like that, where it's the Netflix of podcasting, you have a really exclusive arsenal of shows and you have to pay to access them, maybe that can work. But I do think it's just so hard in podcasting because you have these megastars who also probably don't want to reduce their reach. They want to talk to as many people as they can. People will go to free content oftentimes over paid content. YouTube is like the number one entertainment platform because it's free and you can find content to fill your needs when you need it. You don't need to have a subscription necessarily to watch it. And I just think it's difficult for any platform to compete with existing offerings.
I would agree. I think that part of the challenge for me with the Luminary approach to podcasting, the quote unquote HBO for podcasting, is that HBO worked well because the bar compared to the alternative was just so much different. Plus, they're selling it as part of a cable subscription, so there were definitely economics worked in their favor, but the quality difference was just so much different that there was enough of a there in order to have people want to buy it. And I don't think that gap was quite as big enough for the vast amount of podcasting content that's available for free. But of course, you're not just competing for that. You're competing against everything else that is free. So I do think it's probably a little bit tough to see it at this point.
Yeah. And one newer development following the election, which a lot of people kind of dubbed the podcast election, is this idea of using podcasts as a halo for other programming. So there's talk of, it's been reported by various folks that maybe TV networks would actually bring podcasters on and put podcasts on TV. Does that make an offering that's already existed and was already a major platform, but maybe has seen declining relevance, more relevant and more interesting? So it might not be this traditional video or audio platform. It's more, what if Netflix had the Kelce's podcast? Would that make you more interested in using Netflix?
Wasn't there something like this a couple of years ago? Didn't the Pod Save America team do some type of partnership with some SVOD platform around the midterms? I forget if it was 2018 or 2022, but does this sound familiar to you?
I do not recall, but there have certainly been podcasts that have partnerships, even going back to a while ago. And there are actually podcasters who are doing, I don't know what it's called now, but like freebie channels where they're trying to do this on their own through API-oriented channels, I think, that it's more like, we're on 24/7. If you just want to watch something that's free, you can just put on our channel and we have all our old podcast episodes running. Granted, those are video programs. But yeah, I could totally see something like that, kind of this blurring of lines. Like, we think of podcasts and other content maybe as exclusively, it's MTV. It's like, you think of it as a music audio experience. It actually can be a video experience on a totally different type of platform. And I think you could see that merging happen.
This feels like a lane for Tubi. Just thinking about their strategy and how they approach content and the type of endless, almost like going through like a DVD bin back in the day. This feels like their kind of lane.
Yeah. And YouTube shared some stats talking about how people are watching podcasts, quote unquote, in the living room. So on the big screen, the TV app. I definitely think that says something. Like, there is an opportunity there to bring podcasts to the big screen, if you will. And people just want to vibe. I think of it as daytime TV that you would just put on in the background and it's like noise until you want to look up, more or less. And I can see that being, this is the replacement for that.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the TV app, because YouTube has definitely been making a bunch of improvements to its own TV app as well. They're trying to have a look and vibe that feels a bit more like Netflix or Disney Plus or Max, where you go to a particular channel and it's a bit more episodic, or having previews that come on before you go to it. And I'm sure that Spotify and others will likely follow suit, especially if more of it is going to the big screens in our homes. So I could definitely see that happening. Well, Ashley, this was great. It'll be great to hear a little bit more about some of the things you have coming up. I think you have a summit coming up as well for podcasting.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. We're putting together a summit about podcasting. So it's a day dedicated to business podcasting. You should definitely come. We should talk about that offline. And the storylines I'm watching, what I would say is, again, following the podcast election, I'm very interested in how the new administration uses or doesn't use podcasts to talk about their agenda, what podcasters will be brought into the fold. Could podcasters be in the West Wing? I think there's a lot of questions there. I also think there's been some newer podcasters who are coming up that are having hit shows that aren't on people's radars. And I'm always interested in the people who are bubbling up and the new hit makers.
Nice. We'll definitely follow up on that. But Ashley, thanks for coming on. This is great.
Thanks for having me.
And that's a wrap. Thanks for tuning in to our deep dive on the state of podcasting, audiobooks, and more. Again, a very meta conversation to hear on an actual podcast, but this is the business we're in, and there's a lot of fascinating deals that have happened. So thanks again to Ashley Carbon for joining us. Thanks again to our producers and editors that helped make this show possible. And thank you for listening. Again, if you enjoy this show, who's one friend that you know that you really think would enjoy listening to Trapital? Send them a link to this episode. And if you haven't already, sign up for our newsletter. Make sure you stay up with the latest and greatest of everything that comes from Trapital. Thanks again. Talk to you next time.